All right. Hey guys, what's up? It's Simone.
Hey guys, it's Jay.
And welcome to the Dating Game Podcast. Yay! So today we have a very special episode. It's one that we've been waiting to do for ages, but it took a little bit of convincing, a bit of coaxing. but we are finally here with our mums. Yeah.
Okay.
Some responses, guys. Okay. So thank you, guys. So with me, I have my mum. Mum, do you want your name on the podcast? Just Simone's mum. Simone's mum is fine, I think. Yes, we have my mum, Simone's mum. And
yeah, and I got my mum. Say hi, mummy.
Hi.
Oh, and also we've got our surrogate mum as well coming on shortly. So the idea of this podcast is basically we obviously tell our mums a lot of stuff. Our mums see us getting ready for dates. They ask us, oh, how's it going? I'm so-and-so. We're like, mum, don't ask. It's over now. Like, they've been through that whole journey with us. So we kind of wanted to get their perspective to sort of just share what they think about what we're going through, how different it was to when they were kind of dating and going through that process. And yeah, just kind of just get the hardcore opinions, basically.
Hardcore, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, and observations and yeah, all that stuff. But so mommy, what do you, first of all, what do you think? When I tell you about my dating life, or if I say, oh, going out for a day or whatever, what do you think in general? Like, what's your thoughts?
Well, to be quite honest, I feel quite sad about the problems that occurs when you all go out, especially when you come back and nothing's really happened, if you know what I mean.
Haven't progressed.
So, yeah, progress. I'm quite sad about that. And I feel like back in the day, I would be a dinosaur. It was much more easier because we went out and we didn't expect to get chatted up. No, but we had fun. And when it did happen, it's simple. Nowadays, what you tell me, I just can't believe the ups and downs that you all go through. I think it's terrible.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, but so why can't you believe it? Like, what's different from when you were kind of growing up
to what you think? Obviously, you're not my age now, but yeah, what do you think?
I just think it was so much simple. You went out, had a good time in the sense of dancing, listening to the music, and you know, you might, as the old word would say, you get chatted up. If you like that guy or he likes you, you take a chance on it. But now I feel that you can't even take that chance because I think you, some of you all think it's a bit risky and there's a lot going on. A lot of problems going on. But when we used to go out, it just flowed.
If you like someone,
yeah,
you like
someone. If you don't like someone, you don't. But all this background noise that you're hearing, both on the media, on your phones, your television, I just think it's not good. I think it's awful. I do sadden from it. Yeah,
I just can't believe that. There's such a difference. Like, I just can't imagine. Actually, no, I can imagine it because I genuinely think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jay, when we used to go out sort of like early 20s, we would go out, meet someone, and then we'd kind of, it would kind of keep going for a while, right?
Yes, I agree. I think obviously we didn't have the concentration of social media back then. We had, obviously we did have social media, obviously, but it wasn't as like right now, everybody's got an opinion online.
Yes.
And everybody has all these opinions and everybody gravitates to an opinion that they feel even a slight familiar with or understanding. And then people kind of jump on this trend And that's what happens. That's what's happening right now. Mm. So if we see trends about, I don't know, oh, let's just say something like narcissism, for example, everybody's going to jump to that, and it's almost explosion. Not to say it's not true for some cases, but I think some people blow things a lot out of proportion. I'm not talking about narcissism, I'm saying things in general. So it does influence our minds naturally, because obviously we're taking this, we look at our phones, what, let's say between 2 hours to probably sometimes 11 hours a day. And that's mainly on social media. So I understand what mommy's saying. But what about you, Simone's mom? How do you feel about everything that you're observing from when Simone comes in from dates and stuff?
I think I just, when she first sort of started telling me about the concepts of what is it that you, I suppose you're seeing somebody, then you have a conversation about whether you're going to be an item. Is that right, Simone?
Be exclusive.
Yeah. And then I just thought, oh, it's so complicated. This conversation about being exclusive. I just thought, I said to you young people, it was a D. back in the day, you met somebody, you saw somebody, you were doing a little thing or you're not doing a little thing. That was the end of it, you know. And then you wouldn't have these big conversations. But on the other hand, I kind of feel, well, perhaps it is good to have those conversations, because then you kind of know where you are, that you are an item, and then you are exclusive. So at least you can say, well, I've had that conversation, because back in the day, you might not have had that conversation, but you might think you're exclusive, but the guy doesn't think you're exclusive. And then you may find down the line that, well, actually, you're not as exclusive as you thought you were. Mm. So I think there is some advantage to that, but I do feel that the dating game, if I can use that term, is much more complicated. Complicated.
It is, and I find it really I was saddened by it, to be quite honest, because it's almost like you have to vet, like it's like a vetting game. You've got to vet who these guys are and what they're really about. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm sad to say, some of this aggression coming out on daughters and female isn't good. It's not good at all. I find it quite serious, to be quite honest. I think people should just calm down, you know, and talk properly and be kind to each other. It's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. So just be careful out there, daughters.
I agree with you. I think some of the things that are coming through, it's as if to say a lot of there's a lack of respect for the young women. Mm-hmm. So it's more like it's very much what are we going to get out of this situation, without very little consideration about the women's feelings. I mean, I might be wrong, but I just feel to a degree there is very much that perhaps there's that lack of respect for the woman as a woman. You know, it's like, what can I get out of this situation? You know, without really putting that in, you know, the woman's feelings first.
Do you feel that the men in your generation were more respectful then?
I would say respectful in a different type of way, I think. I think there was a little bit more respect.
In what kind of way?
I think as Black women, I felt there was a certain degree of respect.
Right.
That's how I feel.
Right.
I don't feel there was as much colorism. Or I think you've got a lot more competition, I suppose. A lot of, you know, I think Black men just love women, but they would love Black, you know, would love their Black women. You know, they may not be faithful, but they loved their Black women. While now I don't sort of think that respect is not always there.
Yeah. That's I agree.
I wonder why that changed.
It could be our perception. Perhaps it's our perception. Perhaps we're completely wrong. But that's how I feel. I just kind of feel that there was a bit more respect for us as Black women.
Yeah, I think so. I do.
I think it's very interesting because, you know, there was a stage, I don't know if some of you agree, but there's a time when black women were, or girls were painted as quite like feisty and aggressive and come across really rude. So I remember when it was like maybe just before early 20s, there was this thing that, oh, she's too rude. Like as a black girl, she'll come across a certain way. I think it's kind of come stopped now. I don't know, what do you think, Simone? It's stopped a little bit now. But do you think there's, I don't know, do you think there was like a, do you think, I don't know, not that weird, not black women are to blame, but do you think that there's a lack of unity between the two, black women and black men? Do you think there was more unity back then?
I think there was. I think there was a, I think so. I think there was a bit more unity. I think
just hold that thought. So I'm just going to come in. All right, so we've just had another guest enter the conversation. So as you guys know, we've had Kalila on a couple of times on the podcast. So she's a good friend of the show. And Kalila's mum actually loves the show and listens every week. And we love that. So we've also invited her on as well. And she's sort of like, she's a second mum to me. So we've got Kalila's mum on the show. Hi.
Hi.
All right, perfect. So we're kind of getting knee deep into the conversation now. We're just talking just quite generally, asking you guys about what you think about how you perceive our dating experiences now, how it used to be, what the differences are. And then Jay's just asked a really, really good question, actually.
Yes. So basically I was saying, I'm trying to say in a nutshell, that I think in when me and Simone were growing up, I think just after, probably between like 15 to early 20s, there was this thing that black women were like painted to be quite rude, aggressive and all this stuff. And I feel like there was a lack of unity at that stage. Maybe it's a bit better now since we've got older and there's different movements happening. But at that time, I did feel a sense of lack of belonging, I think, to my own community. Just because of that divide and how I felt personally. I don't know if you agree, Simone, but do you think back in the day when you're going through your dating experiences, there was much more of a unity and community and just overall respect and bond between black women and black men?
Sandra, what do you think?
I don't know. I think from my point of view, there was a bit more maybe unity. I don't know. I kind of think that the only thing was at the time, like between women, there was this, I think maybe colorism was a bit more obvious, maybe.
It's funny. I don't know what it wasn't.
Really? Mm. You might be on the other end of the spectrum then.
What do you think?
I think there was a bit more unity.
I wanted to ask you guys a little bit more about your experiences. Would you say that you actually dated? Because, and I'm talking about dated, like you went on dates and people would ask you out, and then you might even multi-date, you might go on different dates with different people. Did you kind of go through that? Was that a thing when you were kind of growing up and dating?
Yes.
Okay. That's nice. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So that process hasn't really changed for you then, like for like in terms of you looking at us, that's like normal.
I think your dates are probably a little bit more complicated again. I mean, you know, our dates were quite basic, really. Well, anybody else, but it may be the cinema, or you know, you might go to a little party together, or you know, it wasn't as complicated. I think going for a meal wasn't that much of a, we just didn't do that kind of, well, yeah. I didn't do that kind of thing that often. Yeah. So it was different, I think, the way in which we dated.
Well, I can say for myself that I didn't really have a date. I just met someone and you liked them and you went out with them. Well, maybe that's just me, but we didn't kind of do, you know, the way nowadays they kind of they see that person Tuesday and they'll see someone else Wednesday, and if they really like you, they'll see you Saturday, because that's prime dating time, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? We never really had that, and I think it's very complicated.
Yeah, we've.
But
yeah.
Perhaps it's a better way in that our concept of dating was different, or our concept of girls going out there and date multi-dating was different. Do you see what I mean? Whereas nowadays women have more choice and it's about selecting what's suitable for you. Whereas maybe in my days it was kind of, you met someone, you liked them, you kind of thought they were suitable, but you didn't really have anything to compare it with. And that was it.
That's true.
I mean, I can ask a question. Do you think that the multi-dating and being selective is any more productive than it was, you know, than it was for us? Because, you, like you said, you didn't necessarily sort of go out with, do the dating and have this sort of, went through this selective process. You met somebody. If we like them, you end up being with them. But, I mean, how productive was that? Or how productive young ladies now, when they're seeing different guys and thinking, well, that one appears to be fine. And then two minutes down the line, you realise, well, actually.
I think
perhaps.
Sorry, go on, Tom. Yeah, go
it's
on.
Perhaps a little bit, this generation, even though they seem to have a plethora of choices, or so it would appear, you know, it's a bit like the microwave thing, isn't it, to a certain extent, because it's like you've got all these choices, but I suppose maybe some of them, even if they didn't look ideal on the surface, maybe we would push a little bit more and be more, maybe a bit more tolerant, and some, in some cases, too tolerant. You see what I mean? So I don't know. You're right, Julia. I think it's a bit of a minefield nowadays, but I don't know if it's made it any better. Of the other
yeah.
hand.
Yeah. So I think, to be honest, I'm listening to you speak, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like the idea of just being able to go out on a date and then just get to know that person and then just end up being with that person just sounds like great. It sounds like so much less hassle. But there are definitely pros and cons, I mean, to multi-dating. And I think that, so for me, multi-dating or just dating a couple of people or getting to know people at the same time is great, because it means that you can, you know, you can actually look at what you actually want rather than, oh, he's nice. He's like, actually, but he's nice, but he doesn't have the qualities that this guy has. Actually, that's really important to me. And then you can let that person go and then move forward. So I think that it does help you to make a really informed choice about what you want and about what you're looking for. And it's great. And also when these guys let you down, which they oftentimes do, it just makes the fall from grace a little bit less hard, a bit softer. So in that sense, it's kind of like, okay, great. But then also in terms of, I think I've now recently been trying to date more singularly, because I just feel like it can distract you when you're sort of talking to lots of different people, or if everybody's kind of texting you, messaging you, because, you know, people have a lot more access now than they probably did when you guys were growing up, because you've got you can exchange numbers and talk on WhatsApp, you can talk on Instagram, you can talk on Snapchat, you can talk on whatever it is, LinkedIn if you really want to. So having people constantly talking to you from these different avenues, it can be really distracting when you're trying to get to know a single person. So yeah, I don't know what the best solution is. I think it's just about doing it in the right way.
I don't think there's any right way, because I think all of our friends, if you think about our married friends, it felt very simple in my head how they got married. Like, it's very like they met somebody, they said they had a couple of dates, they kind of knew. So I really put it down to, we are just the vetting, like we discussed the other day, is the vetting process. And if we have that feeling that that person's not right, let's not invest our time in trying to date that person. And I think I've definitely done that. I've tried to invest my time in dating people that I'm still not sure about, when actually I should know what I want and what I'm seeking. So it'll make the process a bit easier, a bit more simpler, because of but the problem, the argument against that is you have to get to know somebody, don't you, in order to find out if they are the one. But I think going back to what Simone said about trying to date like singular. I think the problem is for me is when that person isn't the one, say the vetting process wasn't done very well, is the wound after and having to heal and get back on, having to heal, get back, is very tiring. And then the time that it takes for you to heal, and say if it was a long dating process, it could be, I've heard my friends, it could be 2 months, it could be 3 months, it could be sometimes 6 months, sometimes a year. And what happens, we're losing time because we have to heal and regenerate ourselves and put our self-esteem back up again. Because and that process, I know that some of my friends are going through it, and it's depressing, it's very depressing. So it's a difficult right now in this time. If you're single, you've probably been wounded a few times, and it just feels a bit different than maybe back then. Back in your day, maybe it was a bit different because you probably had maybe 3 or 4 guys, not at the same time, but like maybe that you knew that were coming from good stock, so to speak. And then you went on date with one of them, and then if you hit it off, it's cool. And then you had a long-term relationship, you had children, or you were married or whatever. This just sounds so simple. But for us, it's like you said, there's lots of guys. And then they might think there's lots of women. It's like a candy shop, right? Everybody's like trying everybody, and then it's just hard. And then because women are emotionally led, you know, we're the ones suffering and having to heal and get back up on the game again.
I think men suffer as well. I think men keep their emotions down. But going back, I think some of you youngsters don't see the fun. Because you have to have fun to, and men have to have that fun like thinking as well. Because I'm thinking about when you know, I'm in my 60s now. So you're talking my 20s, my 30s. I used to have fun, not necessarily to go out with somebody, but just to be amongst the community. And then if a guy chatted me up, chat them back, you know, it was good, fun. You know, you go out, it's not too serious. You know what I mean? But now I think that it's so serious that it's getting a little bit aggressive.
Also think that out the dating pool has widened, whereas you must remember in our day, we had a telephone, and if it wasn't our parents, then it was the phone box. So therefore, you know, we only met people within our community, or if we went to London. Whereas you lot, you've got people across the world, you've got people here, you've got people there, you've got down the road, up, down, everywhere. And you're so accessible, and they are so accessible through media and what have you. Whereas it was very simple. Do you see what I mean? So, you know, it's all very different, I think.
For me, I think just observing, not just about now, but just sort of, you know, even in our day, I think it's very much about respect, I think. And I think it's really about the men. Yeah, I know it does work both ways, but I just thought, you know, from a woman's perspective, I think it's about the men respecting the women. And I think at the moment, as you said, there is a lot of choice out there. And I think the men realise that there's a lot of choice out there. And I think they're using that in a way to, as a, to their advantage. So therefore, they may know that they're not serious about getting into a relationship. And they may see a woman in her late 20s, early 30s, who they probably...
Personal one?
No, I'm not talking about you, Jay. I'm just sort of talking about... You get to a certain stage in your life, because biologically, as women, you know, we do have a biological clock. So I do. And I feel that the men, they know that they kind of they know that there's a lot of women out there, and they can pick and choose. And I think that is wrong. I think it's, you know, taking advantage of women in most in a lot of situations. And I was even talking to a woman recently who lived in New York, and she said over there it's awful dating.
Really?
Yeah, because she said that the men, they know that there's a lot of women in New York,
right?
And the men know that, and they therefore, and they date, they do a lot of dating, and then when they got to a point, certain point when they want to settle down, they're going to go for a younger woman, a newer model.
Yeah.
So as you get older, the women feel really, really vulnerable, and I do feel that men, you know, will take advantage of that. So I think it's important for men to have that respect for women, and not take advantage of that.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's really true. So we've talked a little bit about the men and about what they could do differently. What do you guys think we could do differently? What advice would you give us? I know Jay's mum, you've already said that you think we could make it a bit more fun or enjoy ourselves a bit more. But obviously you guys, you're seeing us, we're coming home and telling you what's happened and this, that and the other. So just, really kind of brutally honest, what do you think we could do differently? We'll do better.
I think you're part way on the journey, because I think as young women, you've really kind of, from what I can tell, you've really kind of begun to explore what it is you all want and know what it is you all want. And you all seem to, Simone and Jay and Khalil, I can speak for, you seem to have a strong sense of self, and I think that's really a positive thing. And I think that will go some way towards helping you to find someone that you can really relate to. I know there's other obstacles you have to overcome, but I think that's a really good thing. And compared to how we were, in our younger days, or at the same, I can speak for myself, at that same stage where you are right now, you've got a really strong sense of self and what you want and what you don't want. And I think that's part way to the journey.
Mm.
I don't know what the others think.
I think that you need to just love yourselves, really. Mm. And continue to love yourselves and know who you are. And don't be frightened of walking away from something that's not right for you. Because you might see somebody, you might like them, and they're obviously not the right person for you. And I think that if they want you, they will be with you. And I think it's as simple as that. So I think don't love yourself and don't be afraid to walk away if you feel that person's not giving you what you need in a relationship, because I think it's very easy to spend many months, many years in a situation and you look back and you think, why did I do that? Why did I bother? And we Kalila's mum and I often laugh about past relationships.
Mm.
And you do often look back. You might, like Jay talked about, how it can be heartbreaking and it takes a while to get over relationships. But once you get over them, you often look back and you can laugh about the situation and think, I must have been crazy.
Yeah, that's true. Why did I stay
in that situation?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's about valuing yourself, loving yourself, and not being afraid to walk away from something that's not right. And don't waste energy and time on someone or a relationship that's not that's not doing you any favors. If you're sad or being brokenhearted all the time, it's just not worth it.
No, it's not worth the investment.
Definitely. Mm. Well, but what about the men though? What about the men? What should they do? What is their sort of role model to be? Positive, so to speak, because I think
half the battle.
There's a big problem there. So,
yeah, I quite agree with you there, because listening to some of the conversations I think you've had on this podcast about the way some men feel about even their mothers, how they feel
that
their mothers are to blame. I just was shocked, and then
I listened to that episode.
I didn't have it or I was told about it.
I was going to say, you didn't tell me.
Whatever, but I heard the conversation.
Sure.
And I was shocked.
Thanks, Kalila's mum, for relaying that.
Yeah, my little source.
Sources have told me.
I was really shocked, and I realised just how deep all of it is. And that's where I'm going back about respect, I think that's changed from when we were younger, because I don't think our black men kind of held us up more I'm not saying they were perfect, but I feel that we were held up more.
But this is, but then this is the problem that I have, because you've kind of, and I'm not saying that you're saying that the men of your generation were perfect. No, I know that they weren't, but if they were respectful of women,
yeah,
and they've had sons, why have they
that
not?
That would be passed on. Yeah,
yeah, why would that?
That not would be definitely passed on. I kind of think that even though, you know, we may look back and think, oh, well, it was easier and what have you. At the end of the day, there, you know, there's a lot of families that grew up without fathers. And that in itself has affected the way young men navigate and young, your, in your generation, navigate the dating world as well. So I think the older men, men of our generation, do have a part to play, and which should have been played from before, but they have a part to play in directing their sons as to how to respect, you know, young ladies like yourself and what they should be doing. They're kind of just, the guys are just kind of out there and they're, you know, doing, running the gamut, or so to speak. Mm. And this makes it harder for young ladies of your generation and younger to find suitable suitors, so to speak, you know? So I think it, they do have a lot to answer for.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because it's like a whole generation of, yeah, like I said, fatherless sons, and it's so sad, and daughters as well. And it's just, it is sad. But I do see some positives from it, in terms of now, I think there's, I actually read a stat today, I don't know if you saw it, Simone, there's been an increase in our community of couples staying together for longer or something like that. So I think there is a movement or something happening right now that's maybe changing perspectives, which I feel a bit more optimistic for. That's what I feel anyways, and I've seen it a little bit more on my media or social media. But I had a question actually, so somebody might laugh at this, but obviously there's movement, or how can I say a movement of feminism, right? And being strong, independent, powerful women, black women, any woman, just being strong in ourselves. And there's this thing about being the word submissive as well. And there's different points of views, and it's very there's a lot to go about that subject in general. But what's your, you know, as when me and Simone talk about being quite strong women and da da da, whatever, how do you feel about how we're coming across as women, saying that we're very strong, very independent, we can get our own stuff, we can do whatever? How do you feel listening to that? Because in my opinion, after talking to people that are older, they don't really talk like that. Like, we're very independent. Like, it's there, I can see it, but you don't actually vocalize it, right?
No,
but
I don't think we talk about it, but we just do it.
Yeah, but how do you feel about us coming across and actually saying it quite loud and proud and saying, we don't, like, even some people say, I don't need a man, I could just do everything. How do you feel? Do you think that's a negative thing, or when you look at that, what do you feel? What do you think of us?
Strong, but strong. We bleed, we cry, and we at the end of the day, it's human. Mm. And if someone says to me, "I'm strong," yeah, but I'm strong, but I do cry, I can bleed. Mm. Don't hurt me.
So what do you think of me saying, I don't really say it that much, to be honest, but if you hear people, if I say, oh, my friends say they're very independent, very strong, we can get around, how do you feel about us saying?
I think it's a coping mechanism.
Oh, you think it's a coping mechanism?
I think it's coping with sometimes not a good situation. So all of us really would do that. I really think that we as black women have got really great, we had to cope with a lot of stuff from history. I won't go into that. So we've built like that in a very natural way.
Yeah.
And as time go on, other people's going to connect with us. I'm going a little bit on a tangent. Yeah, yeah. I can normally do. But I just think that when this being strong is a coping mechanism.
Oh, okay, all right. So you think I'm coping with it? When I
say I think you're coping, yeah. But I think,
do you think it's a problem though? That's what I'm trying to get to. Right. Do you think it's a problem us saying this a lot? Like, you know, we see it on our social media. And as Simone said a while ago, that there was a time where there's publications like Mary Claire and what was it, like Vogue, for example, or Stylist was a big one, actually a big influence for me, saying you must be independent, you're an independent woman and da da da. Is it a bad thing, do you think?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing to be independent. I think sometimes, what Sandra said, sometimes we do it because we have to do it. You know, I was always independent because I didn't have a lot of choice, and I just got on with it. And I quite enjoy, I think it's part of my personality anyway. I enjoy being able to do what I want to do. However, it's wonderful to have somebody to share any burden with and share, not even burdens, to share good times, to share bad times. I think that being too independent is not always physically the best. I think in the long run, you become mentally exhausted. Yeah. So I do think it's good to be able to share. And I also think that sometimes when a woman shows openly that she's independent, I think some men can find that quite threatening.
Do you think so for example, like, I know that I've watched you be a very independent person, mum, and like a very independent woman, and like you're very, you know, you go and get what you want, you go and do what you want in a way. And I suppose I've kind of like taken that, like, well, if I want to do something, I want to go and do it. And I, you know, I want to make sure that I'm earning well, and I want to make sure I'm doing this, and I want to make sure I'm doing that. Like, there's a lot of things that I've just been like, I want to do like my mum did. But then I've also seen you say to me, oh, no, don't do that. Like, ask the guy to do that, or get him to come and help you, or blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, but I don't know if I've like seen you, obviously, and like I've seen like you and your husband, whatever. And I'm like, but I don't think like you're telling me to do something that you didn't do when I was growing up.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but didn't you see how we do things?
Yeah, but yeah, no, of course. But I just mean like,
and like all the, if it was like about moving stuff or.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I guess I just have this perception of you as doing it all. And I know you didn't. I know you had help, but maybe just from before you had the help.
Yeah, perhaps in those formative years.
Yeah.
And
so I guess I've carried that. And I suppose that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably did observe that. But if I'm looking back and talking about that time in my life, it would have been nice to have somebody to have helped me in that time. And I didn't, it wasn't because of choice. It was because I learned to, as they say, make lemonade out of lemons. Whatever I had, I just got on with it and I just did the best I could. So that is it. But ultimately, if you were to say, Mum, what would you want for me? I would say, I want you to be able to earn your own money and, you know, have a good income. But it's great to have somebody that you can have also their income, put it together and have even a better standard of living, so you don't have to worry as much.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say, that to me, that is the ideal. I want to make you independent. I don't want to make you dependent on anybody, but I want you to be with somebody that you can work together and build and share things with. To me, that is ideal.
Yeah, that's right. And it's very much about respect. And, you know, if you find someone that will respect your independence and not feel threatened by it in certain circumstances. And I kind of feel a bit like Jay's mum, that sometimes independence is a coping mechanism. I know for me, it has always been I've had to cope. Do you see what I mean? Because I didn't have a choice. Whereas like Julia said, that if I had a choice, I would have preferred to have had somebody there to help and support. And then the other extreme is that you become hyper independent because you don't want to feel that if you've had someone in your life and they haven't kind of lived up to the mark, they've let you down. So then you go the extra mile to make sure you cover everything so that you don't feel let down or you know, that you don't have to put your rely on anyone. So that's the other extreme as well.
Exactly. So going back to it being not personal, but looking at my daughter as exactly how I see her, that I don't know how this is going to come across.
Yes, okay.
But
I'll
edit it out. I feel like the softness, the feminism, is it's been chipped away slightly. So you become more kind of harder in your actions, and it can sort of filter down to your friends and your family in a funny kind of way.
So
when you do go into that relationship, you're bringing all that baggage with you.
Yeah,
and sometimes you've got to release some of that baggage to be yourself.
I think it's very interesting that you said baggage, because you would think that because we've been single, you would think that we have no baggage, but actually we do have some type of baggage, because like you said, because if we've been coping, I've been coping almost 30 years. I'm not saying without your guidance. Yeah. I'm saying 30 years, let's say since 18, leaving her to go to university, I've done it on my own, so to speak, because you wasn't in Birmingham with me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you was supporting me, but not, you wasn't there, right? Yeah. But what I was trying to say is that from 18 to now, so that's a good, 12 years, I've done it all on my own, you know? And then if a man comes over, I've got some type of, like you said, baggage to be like, I can do everything on my own. I don't really need you, but I would like you, but do I really need, I don't know. And I guess that's like stuck on me. And obviously we're just talking, me and Simone talk all the time. We're like bouncing things back and forth and back and forth. And we are our own support system. So when a guy comes over, I guess it's like, how do we soften or open up and say, okay, I'm not going to be afraid anymore. I'm going to just relax. But at the same time, I don't think that they give me a good what's the word they don't make it feel better. It's difficult still. It's difficult because they don't say, yeah, relax Jay, have a good time. They don't say that. They give me a harder time. And then again, we're going back to the process of going back and trying to find somebody to relax to or open up to. It's difficult.
It's quite interesting, because if you was to flip that, and if you was to say, how do you think a man feels? No,
yes, that's what I was going to say.
How would you feel if you was in a relationship and that person felt
that she could do everything, right?
That person didn't need you. Yeah. Yeah. How would you feel if you're in a relationship and then the man thought, this woman doesn't need me? How would he feel?
Because what happens is, on the other, when you're looking at a man, then because of your hyper independence, so to speak, I'm putting it inverted commas, you do end up emasculating them, you displace them. So they'll come into that relationship and it's almost as if they can't find their place where they should be, because you've taken up all the room. You're doing the feminine and the masculine, because you've always had to cope and you've always had to carry on your own. It's what I mean. So it kind of works in conflict, and what you don't want is exactly what you pull. It's what I mean.
Yeah,
I think it's difficult, and it is a fine, it's balancing, and kind of, I suppose I can say that on reflection and with insight and with, you know, experience of knowing myself a bit more now, because I didn't understand it at the time. And maybe looking back, you know, some of the relationships I've had, because I've just got on and done things, and, you know, then some people who aren't perhaps confident in their own self will kind of think, well, she looks like she's got it all together, got it, you know, all going on and worked out, she don't need me. And then they, you know, but some, a man who's in who is confident in himself and what he's bringing to the table, and I don't mean financially, just as an individual, as a man who knows his place and knows what he's supposed to be about, he won't feel threatened by that. I believe.
I feel that way too, and I always have, but I think that I'm starting to realize that I think just men in general just don't like you to, they just like to feel needed all the time. Even the most secure men, even the most well put together, everything's great man, just likes a woman to be submissive. And I know that, I don't know if you guys are aware of this conversation, but we have this conversation quite a lot about submissiveness and women need to be more submissive and this, that, and the other, and it's biblical, this, that, and the other. But I've never really heard you guys have that conversation. Is it something that you talk, that you've spoken about or considered? And what do you think? Do you believe in the phrase a woman should be submissive?
I'm laughing at myself because when every time you say that word, I kind of roll my eyes.
Everybody does, though. It's
I just kind of just think, oh, and my face gets screwed up and I'm thinking, submissive.
But you're the woman that's like, I don't believe in feminism. I'm like, you are the ultimate. This is where I get it from. I don't understand. You may not want to admit it, but you definitely have the traits, Mum. Anyway.
Yeah, perhaps I have, but I suppose I was brought up with strong women around me.
Yeah.
And I was brought up with strong women around me that looked after their men, but they were not submissive.
No, I don't think submission is about weakness. I think submission is, you know, when I perhaps used to go to church a lot more, I really understood the whole thing about submission. And I think that we have to understand our power as women. And, you know, we had this teaching that talked about men have got the power of authority, but women have got the power of influence. And at the time they used a little parable to explain it. And they talked about the sun and the wind and how the wind is powerful and it blows down this and it blows, you know, it can cause a tornado and a hurricane or what have you. And most people see the sun only in its power when it gets extremely hot. But the sun has got so much influence how you feel over how you feel. Even today, it's a beautiful day and you can see people just blossom. So as women, we have to use our power of influence. So submission isn't just about, you know, weakness and strength and what have you. It's knowing who you are and what you contain and how you can influence the situation, I believe.
But then why can't if you're in a relationship, why can't you be submissive together? Why is there a line of how much a man or a young man could take from a woman who's not submissive? I can't. Why can't we equal?
Why can't a man submit to a woman and a woman submit to a man? That would be an ideal situation for me personally.
It should be like that.
But do you think it happens a lot in your time then? Do you think both women and men submit to each other in the relationship? Did you see a lot of that? Obviously,
I think in my sister's generation, I think so. I think it's a lot more togetherness, and I kind of love that. I really did when I was growing up, seeing that. There used to be, you know, the old tittle tattle and carrying on, but they were still held together. Like my mum and dad, then they stayed together, even though it might not be the perfect marriage, but they did stay together. But now it's very easy to just walk away.
But I always think that when we talk about grandparents, I think it's, well, like when I was talking about grandma and grandpa, it was a different time. And I also think that grandma, for example, she was a housewife.
Yeah.
So that was that was that time to kind of be. What's the word? Just like you're not a set, but you're just like, I'm here for my husband and kids, and that wasn't a bad thing. It was just like
that's submissive though.
This generation may perceive it as that, yeah, potentially.
But I think also submission might also be, because I think about my grandparents as well, and I'm like, my grandma was like a very feisty woman and always had a lot to say. But then I also know that my granddad has a lot of pride. And I feel like if my grandma would have attacked his pride, that relationship wouldn't have worked. So clearly she must have submitted in some kind of way. Do you think, Mum? Do you think she did?
I'm just thinking about the way she was with him. Like, she, you know, if you came to our house, you would think that she ruled the roost. the roost, but she would cook for him. She washed his clothes. She ironed his clothes.
And she still worked.
And she still worked. She did everything for him. I mean, when my dad stopped working, he did cooking. He would cook and things like that. But and obviously when she was ill, he looked after her to the max. Yeah. But growing up, my dad never, he'd cook occasionally. She did all the cooking. She made sure his clothes were washed. They were ironed. Everything. She did everything. Even now he says, oh, that shirt or that vest, Esme bought that for me. You know, she really looked after him. There was balance in the relationship. She was submissive in the ways that she felt a wife should be. But on the other hand, she wouldn't put up with any nonsense.
And I think today...
Respect.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I think today's version of submission, and we talk about it a little bit in our hypergamy episode, is a lot of men, they expect that. They expect the women to do everything for them, but and still, you know, work and contribute to the household, this, that, and the other, and but then also kind of care for the man and do everything for them. And again, that might suit your personality style and it may not. But I feel like, I think when it's expected of you, when it's kind of like, well, if you're not doing it, then you're not a good wife, and not considering any other aspects, then I think that's when it kind of becomes quite selfish and maybe not as like relationship and partnership driven. I think people are I've had conversations with men that don't believe that marriage is a partnership. It's about the woman submitting, and it's about the woman submitting to the husband, and the husband being the leader, being the head, the woman being the neck, submission. But that is different to partnership. They don't see that as a partnership.
Wow. What, to this day as well?
That's in today's...
That sounds like they're looking for a slave age. To me.
Looking for what, Julia?
Slave. That's how I see it, because it's just somebody to do, it's somebody to do everything for them. So what are they bringing to the table?
Yeah, exactly.
Being the man, that's enough.
Providing potentially, or finances.
They want you to work too.
Simone, I think hold on, let me just say that I think there's different versions of what, because again going back to social media, there's different versions of everything, and that's what everything's ambiguous, because even feminism, like, there's no defined definition, or people could have different types of submission, I guess, because you said they would expect you to work, but I don't know about that. I've seen different submissions to be not that the women don't have to work, like, that's the thing. I think there's different versions to what everything is. It's very difficult to know. That's why you ask the questions up front. What do you want?
Yeah, no, exactly. And what does that mean to you? Of course.
What does that mean to you?
Yes, I can be submissive to you. What does that mean? I was actually given the example of a couple of the conversations that I've had with people that I've met, and that's their perspective. I'm not saying that is what submission means, but I'm saying that what submission does seem to mean from social media is man and woman living together. They're acknowledging that in this day and age, you can't really run a house. It's hard to run a household on one income. So the woman probably will have to work, but she still has to care and care for that man, care for the household, and that should still be her priority, and the children, etc. But of course, everyone's going to have a different version. And I guess that was kind of more what I was asking, you know, our mums, like, what does submission mean to you? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing in your opinion?
There's nothing wrong in looking after your children, doing the chores, going out to work if you want to work, blah, blah, blah. But it's the respect from that man who ends up telling you that you're wrong about some small little incident, and you think to yourself, but hang on there, I thought you understood. We thought there was an understanding in the relationship. And that is where it becomes kind of unbalanced. If there's no understanding, if the man doesn't understand, this is what you're doing through love, perhaps, and he ends up getting heated about something really major, like you didn't iron his shirt properly. Mm. It's a nonsense. Mm. There's no respect, because, you know, if you think about the arguments you've had with a partner or men or whatever, and you look back on it, you think to yourself, what is going on here? Because I didn't put the baked beans on the toast properly, you could have a big argument about that.
Yeah, so it's about nitpicking.
Yeah. So what kind of submission?
Yeah, what is the... Yeah. That's why I go back to the vetting process. I'm really on this thing. Like,
yeah.
I think at the beginning, you have to say, like, not what, how do you want your beans and toast? Not that. but probably it is that detail. Maybe it's not even, not to that extent I'm messing about, but maybe it is literally like, okay, so... not role play, but you're almost saying like, okay, so do you believe in equal? Are you happy to do the garden, to do the garden, and you do the windows, and I do? Do you know what I mean? You have to talk like that, or get a sense of what they're doing, like see them in action. Maybe their job, you can see what the kind of person they are. Maybe through family, you know. And I could go back and look at, and obviously, I know. You both listen to the podcast as well. If I go back in my past relationships, I think the vetting process for me wasn't good enough. I think I dismissed, and I wanted to feel, because I love, right? So I wanted to feel all excited about this one person. So you kind of like become blinded, and you don't see what it is. And then back in your day, I feel like there was a better stock of men. I might be incorrect. That's what I can see from the stories and everything. So the vetting process will be easier. But right now, there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of unbalance. There's a lot of problems with money. There's a lot of, you know, separation in our communities. There's a lot of fragmentation, and so the vetting process, we have to do better, basically, in my head.
I think it's the opposite way around. I feel like when you guys were growing up, you had, you know, people getting left in the Caribbean, being neglected by their parents. Like, there was a lot of like fragmentation, and now really we should be the more settled ones. Okay, yeah, there probably still were a lot of, you know, we did grow up in a lot more single, not more, but we did have a lot more, a lot of like single parent households, and we are still working through stuff, but I think we're probably more stable because, you know, we've got a bit more of a foundation than our parents' generation.
But it's funny that you were saying that when you sort of said, oh, you thought the stock was better and we had a better choice.
Yeah,
I don't think so. I think we just put up with a lot more rubbish.
We
put up with a lot more rubbish. And I don't, and I think you're so right about the vetting process. So right. I mean, I used to, at one point, I used to kind of envy the Muslim couples.
For getting arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Somebody would arrange a marriage for me.
About that. Well, a lot, my friend wants to be in arranged. A few of my friends said that they'll rather that, because they feel like they look at the love growing over time, as opposed to, and like, obviously we're going through a lot of multiple dates. We have to go through all these people. Yeah. So, yeah. And they're very much a community, you know, to some
That's
extent.
Right. And also I remember, sorry, I know I'm taking up a lot of talking time, but I remember being at work, you know, in a maternity unit, and I used to see sort of like some of the Asian couples coming in, and this is when I was tired, and I'd think, oh gosh, they just, you know, you don't even have to think, you know, the husbands, they just do everything for you. I used to think, and so there was points when I thought, oh, I could really do with not having to worry about, you know, could you imagine not even have to worry about the bills? All you have to worry about is the children. You don't have to, that's what, you know, and being a wife. And there was times when, I mean, that might have been my rose-tinted version. But I think, oh, it just seems so less complicated.
I still believe that, I still believe that men, they just need to calm down, take stock of themselves, and just be nice in some aspects, and listen and try to understand that we're all kind of in the same boat, and just understand, because look, going back to this podcast here now, asked me to come on to tell my opinion, but at the end of the day, she knows that it's upsetting to know that my daughter's got to go through all this, and Simone got to go through all this just to have a a stable relationship, a happy one, we hope. But yet us parents are kind of worried that you're out there sort of mingling, but there's kind of a cloud over it. How's it going to end then? How's it going to end? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. We don't know.
How long could this go on for without some sort of understanding?
What's going to happen? It's that feeling of, well, you know, it's not going to last. So just what's going to be the final straw then? You're right. You can't just enjoy the dating someone because you just have that. But maybe that's just our mindset. Maybe our mindsets do need to change, but I think it's going to take someone to make it change. And I know that you guys have sort of mentioned that. Well, actually, Jay's mum, you said very rightfully that I think men or in general or black men need to understand that we're all in this together. And I don't think they do. I think they themselves have this very independent, individualistic mindset of what I need to make sure that this is done before I can get involved with someone, which is fair. And it's great. And it's great that you've got that mindset. But at the same time, why can't we build together? Why can't we grow together? Why can't we work this out together? And also the goalpost keeps changing. Like people have been saying for 10 years, I've got to work on this, got to do this first. I was like, it's been 10 years. What else do you need to work on? And I know that you, Mum, you always say to me, why can't they just build together? Why can't you just build together?
And that's what I think as well. I feel the same, Julia. I think, well, you know, you should be able to build together, ideally, shouldn't you? In ancient communities, that's what happened. You built together.
And that's the kind of thing my mum used to talk about. You know, that's the impressions that she I don't know where I got that thought from, but there was something she must have said or implied. So I always think, yeah, meet somebody you can build together. I suppose perhaps that's what I saw. I saw them, that's what happened when she got married, that they built together. So I can't understand this thing that I need to buy my own house or I need to be promoted in this way. I think, why can't you get together and work together and achieve together?
It's not actually an issue. What's going on is that women are actually doing sometimes a little bit, not better, I wouldn't say better, but what we're doing, we're able to be in different industries and progress very quickly. So when I'm dating now, we haven't had a whole podcast about it, but I think we should, about, you know, sometimes I used to even not say what my job title was or where I worked and what position I'm in, because it can come across quite threatening. And they make assumptions that you can maybe afford certain things. And for me, like, you know, I just bought a house. For me to even mention that to somebody, that's like, whoa, you don't need me. What's happening is that as women, we're progressing quite fast. And it's amazing. It's a beautiful thing. Like Simone said, you know, back in the day, it was like, it was good, you know, to be independent, whatever. That's great. But what we're seeing is that a lot of the men, not that and they're not there, but the ones that we're looking at right now in our pool, we can't see those men that are maybe on the level that we are in financially. I'm not talking in general, but maybe financially. So it makes it even more worse, the process worse, I think. And it's quite difficult. So when we say, yes, yeah, build together, they're like, yeah, but you probably got this, that. So how can I build with you? And that's why there's a bit of an unbalance. I think that's one of the biggest things right now.
Would you say that it's the same of all cultures then?
Oh, that's a good question.
As in, like, you know, if you were to meet, you know, say like a Spanish person or someone from, I don't know, Japan, would you say that they have they got this mindset that we must have our own, then bring what we've got, each individual, to the table to then put it together? They don't. So why is it we have that?
I think I can only talk about my own experience. I don't know, Simone, if you can chip in your experience, but I work in an industry that's mainly all white. I'm probably the only black woman for many companies around. And I think that the pool is easier to find somebody. So it's very easy to like, oh yeah, she's on my level, so yeah, let's just get together and it makes sense. But when we're doing with Black men, they may be in a different industry that I can't see potentially. So I think what it is, the pool is different. So when they come, so I think in terms of different races, I think that it's maybe the networking, the community is already there. So they can see that who their potential match is. With us, I'm still searching for them. Like, for example, we live in Luton, so we have to go out to London. Even yesterday, when we went out in London, they were like, what brings you down here? How did you get here? And why are you here? And it's just it's really a big thing. And then we're seen as we're in the country. Like, we have to drive to get to you? Yes, you do have to drive. So we have to go to the community, and then we're getting, not declined, but we're like, oh, you're too far. So there's basically, Sandra, what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of obstacles for us, especially people that we're good women. We come from Luton, we live in Luton. All the people that are in Luton have already got married. They're already kept in the community. So we're now branching out, but they have to travel to us. We probably earn maybe a little bit more. I don't know, because we're saving, because we're working from home. I'm just making big assumptions here. They probably have their own community that we need to dive into now. They're in London or wherever they are. There's a lot of obstacles.
But that wouldn't be the same if it, suppose it was a young woman from Luton who's going to London. And suppose, you know, Becky was going to London. I'm just using the name as an example. And Becky was met John.
Yes,
they wouldn't think about the fact that Becky lived in Luton.
They would move there next week.
Sorry,
they
would move there next week.
Thank you.
I think, and it's true. I mean, even obviously Jay and I are kind of both branching off and moving and doing different things for work and stuff, and we were in this sort of limbo period of, do we get to know someone, because when we go away we're not going to be able to continue it on. And I just often think to myself, if this was like another community, of course they would that person would come and move in with them, or they would come and visit them regularly, or they would stay committed to them during that time and then reunite when they come back. It wouldn't even be a conversation.
That's right. But you know where this all comes from, don't you?
No.
Cynthia briefly touched on it, although she intended not to. But you know, is that, you have to ask, where does this all come from? Because if it was another community, you wouldn't be thinking that. They'd just get on with it and make it work, and you know, distance wouldn't be a problem. But the fact that we're, you know, you come from London, I come from Luton, it's an obstacle. It's literally down the road.
You would think apparently we live in a countryside.
I know.
One thing I wanted to say, this might be going on a massive tangent, but I think it's down to, and we can edit this out, Simone, it's about where the opportunities a man has can be masculine. So what I'm trying to say is that it, maybe being masculine is in the relationship, showing a dominance. But if you're in a job that we're being told what to do every day, you might not be able to show masculinity through different ways in your life. That's why and there's no sense of belonging. That's why you do have different, like, not saying gangs, but I'm saying that what happens is you want to express your masculinity. So if I'm in the other side of the world and I'm like, yeah, we could still be together, there's no way that he feels a dominant or sense of needing, like, I need him or I want him or whatever. So again, it's just creating another boundary to the relationship, or him expressing his masculinity. I always say that you have to let a man be a man. And sometimes these situations of distance or whatever, it doesn't help. But maybe for other cultures, they have different ways to express their masculinity through finance network, or maybe the upbringing. I really don't know. I may be going on a massive tangent here, but that's one of my theories to why I think it's not working as well. I don't know if I'm
wrong. Sorry, go on.
Pardon? What did you say? Sorry?
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. I think we touched on quite a lot of things there. Sandra as well. You know, why have we got this massive problem? And the fact that what you said about that in a relationship you start weighing up what job you've got, what you have achieved, and why isn't that not being celebrated? in the relationship.
It can't, because they lose this masculinity. Yeah. So because I've done we should have done eight years ago together. But what happened is that I can't wait for you. So what's happened? I've done it already.
Right. So that brings me right round to the generation, like when we were going out, like myself, when we were going out, we didn't look at that. We just looked at, well, I did. Let's put it that way. I didn't look at that. I looked at the fact that, oh, this guy likes me for me, and if I'm working, which is a normal thing to do if you want to get money to go out and get look good, blah, blah, blah. So we didn't have that conversation. But we just went out and going right back to the beginner's podcast when Julia said, oh, we just go to the cinema, you know, or go out to a dance, and that was good enough for us. But now it's like you need to pull up in a Lamborghini or whatever, and it's just crazy.
But you didn't have the pressure. So grandpa and grandma didn't say you must get a house before having a man, like that would probably conversation would probably never happen. Grandpa and grandpa didn't say, oh, you must be on your own, like buy a house on your own. That conversation will never happen.
Well, what?
But on your own, buy a house by yourself, normally in a family environment. Yeah. So I think for us, like we go back into like stylists, they always told us, like maybe not from our own households, maybe it is, I don't know, maybe a little bit actually, but to do our own thing. Yeah, yeah. So I think it's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot. I think you're right, Cynthia, there is a lot there, but I think I want to use the term multifactorial and say that, you know, it's distance, it's all, you know, the dating pool's narrower, it's, you know, your family values, it's what you've been brought up to think, it's so many things you're navigating, but I don't really think we kind of consciously navigated all of those things when we were dating, whereas, you know, this generation is navigating or thinking about all those things, and that might be what it is.
Yeah.
We just did it, didn't we? And we didn't consciously say, yeah, but he lives down there, how am I going to get there? We just did it. You know, and yeah, I haven't got any money, that means I have to go out to work, I might have to work 3 days and then I'll get money and then I'll do this. We just did it, we didn't really...
Going forward, I think that's, you know, obviously that's some really good points, but I kind of feel, where do we go forward
from here?
Is it about the parenting? Where is the parenting here? Where is the values that's being created in our children to change their attitudes towards family and relationships? Because if we don't have structure and if we don't have familial relationships, you know, our community will die.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't have that family structure, if we're not going to be spending, you know, like getting into relationships, parenting our children properly, what's going to happen to the next generations?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about dating and, you know, but I think
that it is about the next generation, isn't it? That's what brings forward the next generation. The
effects of what happened with our generation. And we're going to continue to see the effects. So I just think something has to change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, it's too late for the men that we're dating, but... But maybe when we have children, you know, we can fix it then.
I think going back to what you said about parenting, I personally think that all of us on this podcast, you know, mothers or sisters, I think we've done a good job. I really do. No. I'm seriously thinking that the way we brought up our children, and I know that Jadine and Simone has a lot of respect for family. I think it's so difficult, and I think we've done a good job. I think we have to say we've done a good job.
Yeah.
But what's come about is a big problem, and I can't put my finger on it. is a big, big problem. And as you said, what's going to happen to the children what's been born and been thought about? What's going to happen to them? So in the sense of how are they going to be thinking? And as you said, foundation. What foundation are they going to be grown up on? Whereas our foundation, I would say, was shaky. Of course it was shaky. Yeah. But there was something different about us that we took those values and we brought it onto our children in some way or another. Mm-hmm. It's quite difficult. It's just difficult. Mm. Yeah.
That's a good way to, I guess, come to an end about that in terms of what does this mean for us? And maybe it's a follow-up, Simone, that we can have, like, what's the future of, you know, what does the future look like for us? You know, what do we think the output? Because it's one thing that somebody said to me, I think, Simone, I don't know if I could say it. If you, oh God, I might say it wrong. If you date better, you love better. If you love better, I can't remember what it was. Do you remember, Simone?
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I love what you said.
Love better, marry better, something better. I don't know.
Yeah, basically, at the end, it says if you marry better, you community better. And basically, it's going back to the whole thing that this is greater than us, actually. Yeah. This is actually to do with our community and keeping us sustainable and keeping our rich culture values in our community. It doesn't matter if it's interracial or not. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But it's making sure that we take the values and we give it to our offspring. Mm. Or even if we don't have offspring, is if we give it to our community. So this is why, you know, I feel like we had this podcast as well. I mean, not initially, but I think now I'm thinking about it, for people to listen and say, actually, we came from good families, we're trying to be better in general, and all we want to do is just love and want to be loved. And
yeah,
ultimately that's what we want, and we want the best for our community. Because it's not very nice when we're listening to all our single women around us, and it's so depressing to hear, I can't help that person. I can't help, I wish you had a lovely man to look after you. I wish you did. I really do. I pray and everything. So it's just looking at the future and what that looks like, which we don't know at the moment, but we just pray for better, and that's all we can do.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Nicole.
Thank you guys so much for coming on. Thank you to our lovely mothers who have raised us all so well. And Sandra, I'm speaking on behalf of Kalila, who raised us so well and who we love dearly. And yeah, we just thank you for your input, and thank you for putting up with our stories and our experience. And thank you for the counselling that you offer us after every bad date and every bad link has gone bad.
Well, it keeps us entertained, if nothing else.
Oh, it does keep you on team. Mum lives for the drama. But yeah, but thank you. Thank you for everything. And especially thank you for coming on the podcast today and being so open. We really appreciate it. And hopefully the listeners will too.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. All right, I'll sign out. So thank you guys for joining this episode of the podcast. Please make sure you follow us on the Dating Game podcast. Oh, sorry, I was going to say website. What is that? Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Dating Game Podcast, on Twitter at Dating Game Pod, and use the hashtag The Dating Game Podcast to get involved in the conversation. We'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts. Thank you so much, guys, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.